Planet Radio 88 FM. Om Shiva indeed. I hope you're having a lovely afternoon. We're going to take a moment on a climate affair to take a nice deep breath, to think about nothing for a moment, take a break from what you're up to and the pressures that you're feeling that you're under, because right this moment, none of those pressures need to interfere with your ability to take a deep breath and relax and to recharge and to feel that amazing energy flow through you from that recharge and that breath. In terms of news, the most formidable news in Queensland has got to be the Stage 5 water restrictions that are scheduled to come into effect within the next few weeks and months. Those Stage 5 restrictions, we don't know the full details of them yet, but it does look like it's going to have even stronger impacts on the way we are all living up here. Apart from that, there's other water news as people are continuing to deal with the Murray River problem, the crisis, and many places are trying to deal with the water issues from desalination to new inventions. I'm also going to deal with nuclear power a little bit more because it continues to be an issue in Australia. And I'm going to look at methane production for power and a bit more on biodiesel. I'm also going to look at air conditioners and how you can choose a more environmentally friendly one. And compact fluorescent light bulbs, are they as good as the government wants us to believe? So that's just some of the things we'll be talking about today on the show. Hope you can be with me until 7 p.m. Planet Radio 88 FM. That was Lords of the Fly, an Australian band with their song Juice. Very funky for a funky afternoon. All right, so what am I dealing with today in regards to water? Well, let's look at the crisis in southeast Queensland, because even though it seems to be raining every day, we don't seem to be filling up our dams. And the price of water is going to go up, because excessive users are going to get warning letters and supplies may even be shipped in as southeast Queensland deals with the drought. This is what Beattie is saying. Premier Peter Beattie cannot rule out a substantial jump in the cost of water, but one way or another, he guarantees that the southeast will have something to drink. He says that he will do it by whatever means are necessary. And Mr. Beattie says if an earthquake or a terrorist attack disrupted the grid, I don't know why he calls it a grid, I don't think water's distributed in grids, nevertheless, he says he would ship water supplies in to meet demand. Ship them in. Where from? What's going on? Certainly, Liberal leader Bruce Flegg says water shipments are nonsense. He says that Mr. Beattie is coming up with something new every day and that he's making it up as he goes along. Flegg says that talk of shipping water into Brisbane out of the blue is nonsense. He says that Beattie doesn't even seem to have consulted his own water commission, and asking where does Beattie intend to ship it from and how does he intend to pay for it. Obviously, that's seems like a reasonable criticism. I don't know what Beattie's really planning with the shipping of the water plan. I suppose maybe he could go up north. Is that the plan, to take it from our rainforests or something? But how would that happen, and wouldn't it destroy ecosystems? It seems like flippant remarks about a very, very serious problem, and makes one wonder somewhat about our leaders, doesn't it? Okay, well, onwards on the waterfront in Queensland. As I mentioned before, the Beattie is briefing mayors on level 5 water restrictions, and that's going to be for all of southeast Queensland. And the next stage of drought measures will kick in next month, but the details cannot be unveiled until all mayors have been briefed later this week. To complicate matters, not all councils are obliged to follow the same plan, because some local dams are in better shape than others. But Premier Peter Beattie wants everyone on the same page. That means everyone pulling in the same direction, not being selfish and worried about simply getting re-elected. Mr. Beattie has had a similar warning for the Australian Manufacturing Workers Union in its dispute with a water pipe construction company over pay and conditions. Queenslanders would take a very dim view if there was an attempt by anybody to hold the state government hostage at a time when we're in the middle of a drought, he said. But the union has already said it is hopeful the dispute can be resolved soon. Seems like throwing a bit of a scapegoat out to blame the union in the situation. I mean, everyone's got a right to be treated fairly and equitably, even in a state of crisis. obviously unions want work, so they're not going to be against doing work that is done in a way that's respectful of their needs. I don't think this is unreasonable. And pulling union action as an example of problematic issues for the government, well, I think the government needs to have a hard look at itself and why it didn't actually pay attention to warnings about the crisis of water 6 years ago when they were made available. You're listening to Planet Radio. This is 88 FM in Queensland, Brisbane this morning, this afternoon, wherever we are. Hope you're having a great day. Tadim tataka din 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 ta, tataka tataka din 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 ta, dim kataka din 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 ta, 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 din ta. Planet Radio, 88 FM. This is Kate Conroy with you this afternoon. You're listening to Climate Affair. A wind-driven device could provide an unlimited water supply by harvesting water from the air, says its Australian inventor. However, critics are asking if it's too good to be true. Dr. Max Wizen, a retired medical specialist turned inventor, says he has designed a highly efficient wind turbine that can run a refrigeration system to cool air and condense moisture from it. The wind carries in the water and provides the power required to separate that water from the wind. He says there is a huge amount of water in the atmosphere that is replaced every few hours. This means the whole world could just use water from the air without disrupting the environment. Wizen says the system could even harvest significant amounts of water in areas with low humidity. And he says a 4 meter square device could extract on average 7,500 litres of water a day. In his design, moisture-laden air enters the system and is cooled by a drop in pressure behind the wind turbine blades. The air then flows into a chamber containing refrigerated metal plates covered by a non-wettable surface that cause water droplets to run off immediately into a collection point. The question, of course, is could it actually work? Full technical details of the design are not yet available, but at least one mechanical engineer is very sceptical. He thinks that, in general, inventors tend to enormously overstate the capacities of their devices, said mechanical engineering professor John Reeses at the University of New South Wales. He says that inventors just have a really rosy outlook on what their devices will do. And it's not until you've made one that you discover all the problems. Yeah, that seems reasonable. Come on, how many of us have thought we had a really great idea and then found implementation to be really, really difficult? Professor Reeses, who specialises in heat transfer, says he is sceptical because of the large amount of energy that is needed to condense water. It's huge. The inventor, Dr. Wizen, on the other hand, says he's well aware that a large amount of energy is required to do the job. He says it's like boiling a kettle in reverse. However, he's confident his wind turbine, still subject to patent applications and yet to be independently tested, is efficient enough. The wind turbine is a surprisingly good development, he said, and he's surprised that it actually performs as well as it does. He says that the power-generating part of the wind turbine can simply be increased to collect the wind power required for the condensation process. Well, he says we've got unlimited power, which would be very exciting if true. But the sceptic, Professor Reese, says wind turbines are so far only about 30% efficient at best, and the energy arriving at them is very diffuse, requiring large devices to collect the energy. He says it may be a fantastic idea on paper, and it looks great if it could work. However, the thing may have to be so big to drive this device that it becomes impractical. However, one thing does seem to be certain. If the system does work, it's unlikely to backfire on the environment, says one of our meteorologists. He says the amount of water that humans would use is trivial compared with the amount available in the atmosphere. And if we could tap into it, then we should go for it, because we would do little to upset the hydrological cycle. Planet Radio, 88 FM. This is Kate Conroy with you. You were just listening to a classic from The Orb. Very wonderful track indeed. I find it very meditative and peaceful. So back into the news that keeps us alert and alive every time we hear it. Sometimes we get a bit scared by it, but sometimes it's really empowering. So let's talk about the Murray River. An average month for rainfall across the River Murray catchments last month was not enough to stop the trend of the lowest flows in the system on record. So the difference here is, on the one hand, we've got rainfall, and on the other hand, we've got the water that actually flows down a river. Last month was the driest February on record for the Murray system and followed the driest ever month in January. Just 35 gigalitres entered the Murray system in February, 21 gigalitres less than the previous minimum for that month in 2003, and it is the ninth straight month of the lowest flows on record. And the previous minimum year was recorded in 1983. And this low comes of the flow as rainfall actually appears to be returning to normal, because rainfall across the Murray catchment in February has been close to average, but the catchments have been so dry after 9 months of record low inflows that most of the rainfall has simply been soaked up by a very, very dry catchment. It will take weeks or months of rain for inflows to increase into the Murray. Steady rain is the only thing that will break the drought, and then the effects will be felt for years. Recent storms around catchments in northeast Victoria have made little difference to the river because the ground is so dry. Everything just soaking in, and you know we'll get a heavy thunderstorm, but where it's running on the land, on the earth, it's being absorbed by the earth, and basically there's very little runoff. So all those catchments, they have to be really, really wet for some time before they begin to flow. So that's a bit gloomy. It's sort of a bit like people who've, very, very sick from anorexia and they have problems putting on weight. It's like once you've lost the weight, you've got to work really hard to feed yourself to maintain that low weight before you've even got to gaining weight. And you have to eat something like 3,000 calories a day or more in order to actually gain weight once your body's gone into that terrible mode. And it's so, such a terrible thing to go through for families and for the individuals who suffer from those sorts of things. It sort of looks like our whole river systems have gone into decline, and it's going to take a lot to get us even back to normal, regardless of how much rain is flowing right now. Oh, it's a bit gloomy. Anyway, well, what else have we got on Darling Basin? A new report into the Darling Basin says irrigation and private dams are the main reasons for lower water flows through the system.
So maybe we can improve something.
The report found that there was a large number of hillside dams causing high levels of evaporation. The report also found irrigation extractions are having a big impact, but it's difficult to know what effect they're going to have in the future. And in terms of preventing evaporation, really cool things happen. A plastic cover the size of about 6 football fields will be placed over a reservoir in far west New South Wales to help stop evaporation. The pool-like cover would be placed over the holding pond at Stevens Creek Reservoir near Broken Hill, an area almost 7 hectares. Brian Steffen from Country Water says the cover would stop evaporation, and that would save about 143 million litres of water each year, he said. The total cost will be about $840,000, with $700,000 provided by the New South Wales government. Mr. Steffen says that includes the cost of testing different designs. It's a lot stronger than a pool cover, but exactly the same theory. It covers the water so that it doesn't evaporate, he says, and it should be in place by early October. What a funny thing. I don't know about you. My first thought was, oh, my God, it's going to suffocate the fish. The fish are going to die. Well, what's going on? Because dams don't exist as isolated bodies of water. They're not like just swimming pools. They don't sit around in chlorine and so forth. They're usually constructed, as, of course, the controversy about the Traveston Crossing Jam. They're usually constructed in natural ecosystems, and you take a natural ecosystem which tends to get water runoff, and then you block it off at some point so that the water runoff continues to build rather than, go downstream, and that creates a dam. And birds, fish, all kinds of wildlife utilize dams once they've been created in order to get their water and so forth. That's one of the reasons, of course, that, recycled water is purer than dam water, because dam water's got a lot of feces and, activity in it from all the animals that are messing around. So what's going on with the pool cover? Maybe if the pool cover was a sort of tent across the top, maybe we'd have a better time of it. But this seems like a bit of a suffocating adventure, if you ask me. I mean, it's good to stop evaporation, but at what cost? I wish I knew more, and I wish the article told me more. You're listening to Planet Radio, 88 FM. It's 4:51 p.m. DeFranco on Planet Radio 88 FM on her song Evolve. Fantastic stuff. Definitely get yourself an Annie album if you haven't got one already. She's great inspiration. Saw her once live, and she's every bit as good live as she is on CD. You're listening to A Climate Affair this afternoon with Kate Conroy. I've been talking about water in Australia so far, and another big issue in Australia is the Traveston Crossing Dam. Well, recently there's been a report done that shows, independent report that shows that the dam will be an economic booster shot for the Gympie region of southeast Queensland. And the infrastructure minister predicts that the dam will offer long-term benefits in employment, investment and flood mitigation. She also says that the report highlights that out of the 500 jobs that will be needed to build the dam, 150 of those will be filled locally. Well, the Cooloola Shire Mayor, Mick Vernados, says it is no surprise that the new report commissioned by the state government shows the project in a positive light. And we're going to hear more about that after a new song. You're listening to Planet Radio 88 FM. I'm Kate Conroy with you this afternoon, and you're listening to A Climate Affair. And we have a special guest with us right now. And he's from a new energy company called Jack Green. Hi, you there.
Hi, Kate. How are you? This is Andrew Randall, the Managing Director.
Terrific, Andrew. Very good to speak with you. What is Jack Green?
We're a licensed energy retailer. And we only sell renewable energy. So we're Australia's dedicated renewable energy retailer, currently operating in New South Wales, Victoria, South Australia, and soon to be Queensland. We're fully licensed to Queensland for when that opens for deregulation.
Very interesting. And what's happened with you coming into the market now? How did you get there?
As of July 1, the Queensland energy market or electricity market fully deregulates, which allows for the first time consumers to choose of which electricity retailer they would like to be on. And so we basically applied for a license with the Queensland government, and they granted us that license, and we've now setting up operations in Queensland to start selling to the community.
Wow. So how do you get a license to sell electricity? What do you have to do for that?
Oh, yeah, you've got to go through a lot of hoops and make sure that you know exactly what you're doing as far as selling electricity retail. It's through the Department of Mining and Energy, and it takes a number of months, and they, you know, basically check through what you've done previously in other states.
Just to make sure you can deliver what you promise. Is that right?
Sorry, Kat, I actually can't hear you too.
Sorry about that. No, that's okay. I was holding the phone up the upside down way. That's good to be upside down in some facets of life, but probably not when it comes to technology. Let's try that again. My question was, this is designed to make sure that you can actually deliver on your promises to the consumer, I'm assuming.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You obviously can't take chances with electricity, so it needs to be with a fully licensed operation.
Absolutely. So I guess I'm a bit confused. As a consumer, you think, oh, yes, it'd be good to use renewable energies and things like that, but it all seems to come through the same plugs and the wall and things like that. So how does it actually work that you can give that?
Nothing changes as far as your setup. It still comes, you know, down the poles and into your house. As a retailer, we have to buy on behalf of our customers, and if you can imagine, electricity goes into one pool and then distributes out. It's actually we on behalf of our customers buy the electricity that goes into the pool. So it's a little bit indirect, but basically we guarantee with our customers that every every kilowatt you use, we're buying renewable energy on your behalf.
And what?
We also Green Power, which is a government accredited agency on new renewable energy. We have that Green Power accreditation on every product that we sell, and that just ensures that it's new renewable energy as well for that portion.
So, do I get 100% renewable energy if I go with you guys?
Yep, absolutely. Basically, what you choose is what percentage of green power accreditation that you want, and then for instance, our base product is 100% renewable energy and 10% green power accredited. That green power accreditation ensures that portion is definitely coming from a new renewable source, which means you're increasing the amount of renewable energy into the overall grid. And that will be offered at no extra cost, so it won't cost you any more than what your regulated retail tariff is.
So does it cost, I mean, how much more are people looking at if they wanted to change over to you guys?
Yeah, as I say, the base product will cost you no more.
Wow.
And if you want to ensure, you know, if you want to go 100% green power accredited, which means that you're ensuring that everything that you're buying is coming from new renewable sources and it's government accredited, that will cost you about $4 a week extra.
Okay.
But really, you know, if you put it down to, you know, it's really a cost of one cup of coffee or something a week, and you're basically taking the deepest green product that you can take.
It's amazing. The difference here is a sort of a subtle one. What's an old renewable product? I mean, you're saying these are, you know, 10% guaranteed to go towards new renewable things.
Yeah.
What's an old one? What does that mean?
Well, what that means is it's currently, you know, probably hydro or wind that's already operating and in the system. So it's nothing wrong with it. It's just you're not necessarily increasing the amount of renewable energy overall in the grid if you're buying from old renewable. But if you buy from new renewable, then you're comfortable that you're actually increasing the amount of renewable energy in the grid.
So what's your favourite form of new renewable energy?
Oh, look, I'm a big wind advocate. I think we just haven't done enough with wind generation in Australia. I think we're less than 1% of our generation is still coming from wind. If you look at, you know, Europe, the leaders, I think Germany and Denmark, and they're up to around the 20% level. So there's, you know, we're a country with a lot of wind, a lot of solar, and we're just not using it. I think if you took my long term aspect, I think it's a real shame we don't invest a lot more into R&D into solar, because we were leading that charge probably 10 years ago, and there just hasn't been enough R&D in there, and all the best technologies get bought and go over to the US. But right now we can significantly increase the amount of wind power that goes into our grid.
And what is this going to do for, let's say, a lot of Queenslanders have jobs in the, you know, power industries and mining industries?
Yep.
You know, how is it going to work for employment for people? Let's suppose we all do go over to renewable energies.
Yep.
Do the people who work in the mines then get, you know, lose their jobs, but then do they get offered jobs in the new renewable plants?
Yeah, look, that's probably the major thing to look at, you know, as far as status quo. But, you know, the fact of the matter is there's a lot of coal electricity generation in Australia, and that will remain. Coal is the cheapest form of energy generation, but it is the greatest greenhouse gas emitter, and the reason why Australia is the highest greenhouse gas emitter per capita is because of our reliance on coal-fired generation. So I guess our motto is there's a big increase in energy demand projected in Australia, and it will happen. If we can capture, you know, the greatest portion of that coming from new renewable projects, rather than just increasing the amount or you know, building up on the number of different coal generators, we're going to do the greatest amount of good. So there's still going to be that base load of coal. That's going to remain. Jobs will remain. They need to work on how they can reduce their emissions over time. But as far as all the increase, if it goes into new renewable generation, and I think the stats show that there's something like 2 or 3 jobs to one on a new renewable projects against coal-fired generation. So I think the investment in that will mean more jobs.
Well, more jobs would be certainly, it's something politicians are always concerned about in their electorates, so that's good news. What do you think about these plans for pumping carbon under the earth and all the sort of ways to try and make coal-fired plants a bit more environmentally friendly? Do you think they're any good?
Well, look, you know, they have to become more environmentally friendly. You know, the climate change is a reality, and coal generation is the greatest component of it. At the moment, that seems to be the only real obvious way to significantly reduce the greenhouse gas emissions, geosequestration. So it's it's probably still a few years away before it comes into a commercial model. But I think it doesn't sound a fantastic solution, but it's a lot better than it just going up into the air.
Right, right. Yeah, sort of any steps are good steps. I heard that New South Wales is starting to consider and put that into motion at the moment, so they're trying that out. Well, what does Jack Green think on the issue of nuclear power? Because obviously there's a huge ruckus going on in government with people saying, oh, yes, well, if you really believe in reducing greenhouse gas emissions, you've got to say go nuclear.
Yep, you really want to drag me into something.
Well, I want to know as a consumer, like it's a reasonable question for me to ask.
Yeah, look,
you know, is it something where I could find out that I could be using nuclear energy in the future?
Yeah, well, funny enough, we've actually put a statement out not that long ago saying that nuclear energy there's more consideration than just greenhouse gas emission with nuclear. There's absolutely more, and there's a number of significant issues with it. We want to make sure that we never buy from nuclear, to be honest with you.
Yep.
And we've actually put forward that a consumer should be able to differentiate as to whether they want power from nuclear or not. So that's that is our stance. I just think there's a lot of work to be done before you'd be convincing that nuclear is safe. Especially in with all the with all the concerns around the world today with terrorism, etc. And secondly, I don't think it's anywhere near cost effective either. They haven't proven these new nuclear plants work yet, which is where they're coming up saying it can be cost effective. And in the meantime, sitting in our backyard is all this wind, all this solar with absolutely proven technologies. That's really where we should be spending right here and now. The only reality for nuclear would be probably 10 to 20 years away, and we don't agree with it, but it's too late as well.
Too late. Well, these are very interesting discussions. I think we'll go and have a quick music break. You're listening to A Climate Affair. I'm Kate Conroy, and we're interviewing Jack Green Energy. That's soon going to become available in Queensland if you're interested in renewable energy sources for your home. I think they're launching in April. All right, let's listen to a song. At the moment, I'm having a great interview with Andrew from Jack Green, Managing Director of Jack Green Energy. Hi, Andrew. Welcome back.
Thanks, Kate.
So we left on the break then with a very exciting topic of nuclear power, and you've said, look, we don't even know that it's economically feasible or environmentally feasible regardless of the greenhouse gas emissions. Is that right?
Yeah.
And that seems reasonable based on the information. It certainly doesn't seem like a short-term solution by any stretch.
It's absolutely not a short-term solution. There's a very long lead time, aside. I don't think we've got that long to start making significant changes.
Yeah, given the time frame, I mean, do you think I've been reading that peak oil's probably hit, and we've probably hit and the decline now in carbon fuels, and so we need immediate responses to these problems. And I guess one of the immediate things people can do is to adopt renewable energy.
Yep.
And we have providers now.
Yeah, so, it's look, it's a really simple thing to do. And in Australia, it is the single largest change that you can make to your emissions. And it, when you've got, you know, I guess Jack Green there, we, you can actually start changing without without it costing you. So, you know, there's no excuse really to start making, you know, making these sort of changes.
Yeah, I still can't believe this idea of a no-cost switchover. I actually saw the Jack Green stuff that you guys did with Channel 10.
The Kool-Aid program.
Yeah, Kool-Aid program. I was absolutely flabbergasted by that program. I couldn't believe how cool it was. Haha, cool. I should be working for them. It was so in-depth and yet accessible.
Yeah.
You had great people talking. You had Malcolm Turnbull look like a bit of an ass, which he is. So it's really good that you know, there was some hard-hitting journalism there.
I have
there.
No comment there.
No, that's fine. You don't have to comment. But it was just so terrific, and Al Gore and everything. So I think a good job there.
Thanks for that. Yeah, well, and it's part of a promotion that we've been doing. We actually partnered Paramount Films for the rollout of the DVD of An Inconvenient Truth, Al Gore's movie. And we've also offered that DVD free to every high school in Australia, including all of Queensland's high schools.
Wow.
So it's yeah, it's part of a push to you know, to just get the message out there that you know, as a one as a general understanding to what it's about. And then two, obviously, we like people to say, right, we'll make a change and come over to Jack Green.
Absolutely. So what do you think is going on with Australia, given your concern for education of the kids and your previous comment about brain drain with solar technologies and so forth?
Yeah.
What is going on in Australia? Why don't we keep the people who are capable of changing the world?
I think we've just been, you know, certainly on a federal level, we've been very slow to react to obvious positions, I think. Look, that's rapidly changing. I think suddenly there's been a realisation that this is a very important topic to the wider community. If we don't start making positive reactions, you're talking about climactic sort of, you know, things that will happen. So it's not just a matter of policy, it's a matter of, you know, saving our future.
Could argue that it's already happening, the climactic events in Australia particularly.
Yeah, well, look, you know, you look at drought everywhere, look at our water problems. Look, you know, even if it was only, you know, 90% probability, which we, you know, I think virtually all the climate engineers will tell you differently, we just can't afford. We can't afford to mess with this.
No.
We've got to do something. What happens when we run out of water?
Oh, you know, Peter Beattie says we should just chuck it in. Did you read that in the newspaper? He says we should just...
chuck it in, yeah.
He said we should just ship it in from somewhere. And, of course, the word there is, where's the somewhere, Peter? It's like, great, you know.
Well, it's going one better than, you know, putting a lasso around a glacier and shipping it up.
Yeah.
It's amazing that we've, you know, we've just always thought that we've got plenty. With water, I don't think we do. And, you know, we can start making, we need to start taking responsibility and making changes. And there's really easy, simple things that can be done. And if we do it as, you know, if we do it en masse, then we will start making a difference.
So speaking of individual changes, I mean, how did you come into this whole environmental movement? What motivated you?
Look, I've always had a strong interest in the environment, and we actually have a finance and investment background, and we're investing in alternative energy projects going back the last 10 years, and then out of that we had done some research in 2003 to look at, you know, what green energy options there were to the wider community, and basically at that time none of the energy retailers were really making available green or renewable options. So we did research. I think we researched about 3,000 homes initially, and you know, what came out of that was, you know, 96%, I think it was, of the community would, you know, would had said they would convert to a renewable option if it wasn't costing them anything. So if you, say, then put a price premium on it, suddenly you're down to 3%. So I think that percentage is probably higher now because it's a lot more of an issue. But we just decided that there was a real opportunity here to try and get the wider community to start making some incremental change.
So what have you found in your personal life is the hardest thing to change that you know you should?
That's a good question. Well, I guess I now drive a Prius, and I had to get rid of the beloved Mercedes about a while ago. a bloody old Mercedes, I'll tell you. But anyway,
they're the worst ones. They're the ones that really pollute. You know, if you're going to get a new car, that's, you know, all right, maybe. But the old ones.
Yes, I know, and I've got a Prius now. I love it actually, and. You know, we don't have air conditioning. That's the decision that we make. Things like that, just sort of just decisions that you make. As you know, you're always cursing that decision when you're having a really hot day. But we just, you know, that's I guess our preference. Just to, and I think going forward, and especially with Queensland, is obviously the design of housing going forward to make sure that. You know, you don't need as much air conditioning as possibly is being used at the moment.
Yeah, with all the bad architecture that Australians so love.
Yeah, that's right. They still they put blocks up everywhere and don't think too much about them. But I mean, yeah, state governments have been moving, I think, fairly positively on getting appropriate design and standards for the environmental movement. So I think that's sort of been moving relatively well.
Yeah.
But air conditioning is probably, it's probably a really important point to, and I think one of the tips we say is, you know, if you just turn it down 1%, sure there's times when it's just too hot, but if generally if you just put the dial down 1%, it makes it, it does make a huge difference to the amount of electricity you use, and that obviously saves you dollars.
Well, it's a very interesting question you bring up about air conditioning, because I actually had my air conditioner serviced yesterday.
Yeah.
And my air conditioning man, he was absolutely brilliant, and I thought I'd drill him about air conditioning.
Yeah.
And he said that there's one big difference in air conditioners. Some of them have inverters, some of them don't.
That's right.
The old technology air conditioners rattle along constantly, and you can certainly do well by turning them off. But the old ones, right, if you have an old air conditioner and you put the temperature up to around 25 or 26 degrees centigrade, which is what I was doing, thinking I was being, you know, really good to the environment, once the air actually reaches the temperature, it clicks off the engine,
right,
and then it clicks back on again about a minute later when the temperature starts rising.
Yeah.
And actually, the amount of energy required to turn on the engine is many, many times more than the cost of running the air conditioner on constantly.
Yeah, I could see that.
With these particular kinds of air conditioners. So actually, I was not necessarily doing the right thing for the environment by turning it down.
You probably went too far.
Well, it's all a matter of your individual circumstance. Mm. I personally live in a crazy apartment, very poorly designed, and it never turns off, right? So I never have that problem where the engine turns on and off. It just goes forever.
Yeah.
But a lot of people will be in that situation, and I thought it was really good to know that there's a difference. Like, even within using an air conditioner, you might have differences in your own usage depending on the brand. So apparently, ones with inverters like Mitsubishi's and Panasonic's, they are really good, and apparently Fujitsu and LG are not very good.
right.
Apparently they use a lot of energy, and if you look at the Energy Star ratings, it's a good indicator if you're out there shopping, obviously.
Yeah, star ratings are pretty important with air conditioners.
They really translate into cents, well, not cents, dollars, many, many dollars in your pocket.
Yeah.
So I've got a funny question for you. If everyone turns to Jack Green Energy, why would we need to turn off our air conditioners? Why can't we just use the wind power?
Yeah, look, the probability, well, if everyone suddenly turned to Jack Green, then we wouldn't be able to supply or everybody.
Okay, so quick.
number one. I'd love to try and work out that problem. But I think a couple of things. The first step is to move to renewable energy. And that does negate, I guess, your personal emissions. But I think there's also an obligation, secondly, just to see what can be done to reduce your energy overall, because it just brings less. It reduces the burden of energy requirements, especially in peak periods, and that's when all the big polluting ones, really are belting it out.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, look, it's been so great to chat with. I've had a great time. I hope you've enjoyed the time.
Yeah, no, I have, Kate. Thanks very much. And
no worries.
Ask your audience to support us. If you want to have a look at us, you can see us on jackgreen.com.au.
Jack Green, that's all one word.
All
Jack
one
Green,
word, yep.
.com.au.
Yep. And as you said, we can start signing people up as of next month.
That's just amazing.
Certainly, if you've got inquiry, people want to send an inquiry, we'll put them down.
Terrific. So for everyone out there, easiest way to get through to Jack Green is to look onto the website. That's jackgreen.com.au. You're listening to Planet Radio 88 FM.
Listening to records, I just knew what to do. I mainly taught myself. And, I did pretty well, except there were a few mistakes that I have just recently cleared up.
You're listening to Planet Radio. I'm Kate Conroy, and this is The Climate Affair. And we've just been talking to Jack Green Energy, and renewable energy supplier who's coming to Brisbane in April. And that's very exciting. And you can swap over to their energy just by clicking on their website, which is jackgreen.com.au. And they will charge no extra from what you're currently paying to help you over to renewable energy. I think it's amazing. I'm stunned. And, of course, you can spend, I think it was about the cost of a cup of coffee to improve the amount that you're spending on renewable energies, new renewable energies, the things that are going to be bringing greater numbers of renewable energy sources onto the grid, which is just great, fantastic, very exciting. Oh, so what were we talking about? Let's take a break of the breath, take a nice deep breath. And if you're on your way home from work, or you're working at home, or you've been very busy today like I've been, and you've been trying to change the world for the better, which I'd like to think I'm doing, then it's good to realise that we are good as we are right now. And we should all give ourselves a little hug to ourselves, because I think I need more hugs in my life, but sometimes we don't have anyone around us that can give us those hugs that we really need. So if we can take a deep breath and just allow ourselves to be appreciated by ourselves, just be like, imagine if you gave yourself a hug, how you would try to give energy to the body and to try and renew it and make it feel better about the situation that it's in. That's all I'm talking about. Okay, so before we had that great interview with Jack Green, we were talking about the Traveston Crossing Dam and the controversy that there's been a report released that says, oh, look, it's going to be great for the environment. But, of course, there's a lot of opposition to this report because, it looks a little bit suspicious. And the Cooloola Shire Mayor says that, the report ignores other independent studies that show the dam is unnecessary, and he believes that the report was written for the state government in favourable terms. The report doesn't say the cost of water, which is going to come with the Traveston Crossing Dam, and it's going to be in excess of $3 per kilolitre. The kilo means 1,000, so I'm assuming that means per 1,000 litres. It's always a bit difficult to evaluate what is a good or a bad price for water, because that doesn't sound like a bad price to me. But, of course, I'm not someone who's, supplying water to farmers and industry and agriculture and stuff like that. But the mayor says that there'll be 76 square kilometres of rich agricultural farmland being inundated. And it doesn't show there's going to be 2,000 people directly displaced by this inundation. This is the report he's talking about. The report doesn't show the cost of the dam, which is far too expensive when you compare it to other alternatives. But the minister, you know, is resistant. You know, she thinks that there's a lot of positivity about the dam, and she says, you know, if you invest $1.7 billion into a depressed economy, it's going to have a positive effect. Well, yeah, you know, she's right. Certainly, injections of money are great, but why do we get injections? If there's going to be injections of money, why can't we have injections of money that are going to increase employment towards sustainable and well scientifically validated studies? You know, it's really crazy. So there's apparently some of the anti-dam campaigners have looked at the report and said that the study was actually just put together quickly from existing information. So ASIL Tasman, which is the company that did the study, in their executive summary, highlights that it was a preliminary overview of potential for the area after the dam's built. And they also said it was done quickly and using existing information. So, you know, people against the dam are like, look, this is just a desktop study. It doesn't even really have the sort of concrete information or detailed information you would expect in something which was getting so much publicity. Ah, you're listening to Planet Radio 88 FM, John Butler Trio coming up. Treat your mama. Well, we've got a special treat for everyone. We've actually got another guest in the studio, and this is Mal Webb. Hi, Mal. How's it going?
Very good.
Terrific. So, Mal, what are you doing up here in Bris Vegas?
I'm doing mainly up here to do a gig with a band called Moot, who are doing their CD launch at the Globe Theatre on Saturday night.
Globe Theatre on Saturday night. Mm-hmm. And what kind of music are you playing?
Well, they play Brazilian-inspired original stuff. And I'm a bit hard to describe. and also, oh, Rob Longstar's doing it as well. I think he's doing it as a solo thing. Sorry, I drifted away from the mic.
That's all right.
And, yeah, but I do all sorts of stuff with my face and play lots of instruments and, yeah.
Do stuff with your face. Yeah. This is a great intro. What do you do with your face?
Well, I've been playing lots of different instruments since I was a little kid, and then when I got into singing, I sort of started mucking around with it as if it was an instrument more than your average bear, and it was sort of Bobby McFerrin was a big influence on me because he's very instrumental in the way he uses his voice, but you know, lots of other people like Wes Harrison and all the sound effects dudes, you know. But I'm not really a sound effects guy. I just like making different music with my face.
Gotcha.
Because whenever you do a workshop, you know, kids are always going, can you do a chainsaw?
Yeah.
It's like, no, I can't do a chainsaw. Oh, why not? So, because I don't do sound effects. But anyway.
But I'm a child and I want to hear a sound effect.
I want to hear a sound of chainsaw. Anyway.
Have you heard the Lyrebirds doing the imitations, so they do chainsaws?
I've got a great CD of different stages of life of lyrebirds. And so you've got a baby one which is just like that, and then at about 2 years they start going and starting practicing. And by about three, you know, I think by the age of three and a half, they're sort of teenage. And so they're trying every impersonation as quickly as they possibly can, and they, you know, it's so funny.
Oh, my God.
I've got to keep a copy of that on me so I can play tracks because it's just hilarious.
I would love to hear someone. I wish now that you've told me about your Bobby McFerrin love and your crazy face that and the few people in the world who probably appreciate the lyrebirds and their.
Oh, lyrebirds are great.
They are great. So I don't
know. Apparently they're the only other animal apart from humans. Well, someone can ring in and tell me otherwise, but someone said humans are very good at choking to death because our the split between our esophagus and our windpipe is so far down our throats, and so it's easy for things to get caught.
Mm.
And apparently a lyrebird can choke to death as well because its syrinx is so far down its throat. So it's got all that modulate, you know, that having a long way down your throat means you've got a whole lot of face to modulate the sound, and that's why humans and lyrebirds are both very good at making lots of sounds. But, yeah.
Wow. Goodness me. Well, this is a very exciting beginning.
I'm a bit of a nerdy sciencey type, aren't I?
I love it. No, look, nerdy science is what this show is all about.
Really?
This is a news and environmental news and current affairs show.
Great.
So your views, eclectic views on the environment are welcome.
Excellent.
And in fact, let's put you on the spot right now. What's the one thing that's really getting your environmental goat right now?
I tend to play things in very small small things. And the thing that really gets me is plastic water bottles at festivals and stuff. Just, you know, so I think small things are a good place to start. But those plastic water bottles, and they're, you know, like on airplanes, they give you ones which are about 10 mil. And you go, oh, actually, no, I've got my own plastic water bottle. Here it is. You know, it's, I refill it. And they go, oh, but wait, you can have this one. It's like, no, I don't want it. I just don't. And it drives me nuts, people forcing plastic bottles on them. Yeah. It's all right. They're recyclable. And so, no, they're not really, you know, you got to melt them down and that costs a lot of
energy.
Energy and, you know, emissions and stuff. So, yeah, so that's one of my, and also particularly importing water from Europe and from Fiji and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous. Anyway, so that's my pet little at the moment.
Fantastic. Well, let's jump to a song off your new album.
That's the old one.
This is the old one.
Oh, do you want to? Yeah, you can play something. No,
well, let's see. No. I'll play the song and then you'll tell me what album's it off.
Great. Are you picking it at random?
Yeah, sort of. Here we go.
Oh, great. This is great.
Sounds like Liebert's.
Wake up, wake up. Don't let tomorrow be today. Don't let the good times roll away. Wake up, wake up. Don't kick the Sandman out in the door. Don't let him spring and go one grain more. Wake up, wake up. As he worries you exude. A long winding tube for ruining food. Wake up. Oh, wake up, wake up. Prize your eyes wide to the sky. In horizons rise of wise guys' lies. Wake up, wake up. Little scenes of dream remain. Make your ruminating grain refrain. And wake up, wake up. Choose to lose the snooze again. Put procrastination off till then. The gluten yawn with the scorn of a newborn torn between hoarding and spending. Keeps depending on a leap in the deep end. Wake up. Let tomorrow be today. Don't let the good times roll away.
You're back listening to Planet Radio, and you're listening to A Climate Affair with Kate Conroy, and we've got Mal Webb in the studio. And we, remarkably enough, just played his song, which involved a lot of bird calls.
Yeah, all my bird impersonations. That's because she just picked that track at random.
Yeah, that's
okay.
That's the kind of zen place we're working in here.
That's freaky.
Freaky. Great track called Wake Up off your new album called Three Cheers for Peace and Quiet. which is very cute. Where'd you get the name from?
Me and my nephew were sitting on a chairlift, and we were hooting along, and it suddenly became really quiet. And we went, wow, it's so quiet. And I went, hey, three cheers for peace and quiet. And we both went, hip, hip, run! And my niece and my sister in front of us going, what was all about? And I was like, hey, three cheers for peace and quiet. And they went, oh, yeah, cool, hip, hip, run! And it just became this stupid little thing. And I thought, oh, no, it needs to be an album title. But it's confused everyone. Everyone's going, why are you burning your instruments? Because I've got for the listener, I've got a little campfire of instruments on the front cover.
That's right. It's a very, it's a beautiful scene, actually. It reminds me of some of those early portraits of Australians. Oh, you even know the name. Yeah.
I thought, because I saw that's on my brother's property. If you go to my MySpace site, that photo's up on that's my little photo on my MySpace site. But I was at my brother's house and just saw that little shack and went, it's a McCubbin. Oh, my God, my next album cover. So I took a camera down and took several things and photoshopped them all together, which you probably can't notice the photoshopping because I spent a lot of time on that. But,
That's very, very beautiful. Yes, so there is a picture of a lovely old wooden cabin with the corrugated iron and you looking quite zen and serene sitting on a log out the front of the cabin. And the little looks almost like plastic instruments, I have to say.
Yeah.
A bit of plastic.
Yeah.
Well, you've got. So, what's your MySpace account so that people.
Oh, just anything at Malweb. Oh, no, sorry. what am I saying? No, well, I've got malweb.com, and it's probably easier to just go through that. But it's.
Sorry, Malweb. That's Mal, M-A-L, web.
W-E-B-B.com. A for Apple, Mal. Because people often think I'm Malweb. And Malweb is actually a MIDI file composer. Interesting. But anyway, so Mal with an A for Apple and web with two B's, not two B's.
And it's .com. No AU. No AU. Okay, no AU. Awesome.
And my MySpace is Malweb1 because some woman in America took Malweb, even though her name isn't Malweb.
You can
dodgy.
You can do something about that, I'm sure.
Yeah, I've sent her a message saying, oh, look, if you feel like giving up, you know, Malweb, I'd be most touched. But I said it in the nicest sort of way and, of course, she hasn't replied.
Ah, yes, as is the way with email, an easy way to avoid actual communication with people.
Exactly.
So you've brought some crazy instrument into the studio.
Yes, I brought my imbira in, which is a very good friend of mine. It's a Zimbabwean thumb piano. It's such a cute instrument.
That is so.
And I could play it. I'm just trying to think of a good song to play on it.
I've got to describe it to the audience whilst you're thinking. This instrument, I think it's made of metal. Yes?
Yeah, the body, it's a block of wood with sprung steel wired to it in a very elaborate manner. And so it's a type of thumb piano. But, you know, to pay respect to the instrument, really, you should call it its proper name, which is imbira. You say imbira.
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 I can say imbira very easily.
Great. So I still haven't actually thought of what I'm going to play, but maybe I'll do. Oh, look, maybe I should do something I've never actually done on imbira before.
Oh, I think that's the wisest choice.
Because I've got a song, which I usually do on guitar, and it's going to be in the wrong key too. This is so exciting.
It is exciting. It's all right.
It's just a drop. Wow, this puts in a very strange key. It's just a drop in the. Oh, no, I'll do it down the octave. Oh, this will be nice. Okay, here we go. Now, this is a song all about your drop in the ocean. So if we're on environmental things, and this is a song that's not on my CD, I did a show with Bob Brown last year, and it was a comedy show during the Comedy Festival in Melbourne, and it was great. And it was basically a fundraiser for his Wielangta Forest case and stuff. And he, of course, won that case, which was good. While I was working with Bob on that and found out all sorts of amazing things about Bob Brown and just his general, even though he's, you know, can bring people down a little bit with his knowledge, you know, because he's very straight about facts, but he always puts a bit of a positive spin on the end of everything, which is made me think, oh, yeah, that's great. There is something you can do. And then I was thinking about the whole line, oh, it's just a drop in the ocean sort of thing, and I thought, well, amazing what one drop could do, you know. And so I thought I'd write a song about it, and this is what came out. You know, so it's in completely the wrong key, which is going to be quite exciting. But I don't think it goes too low for me. Well, this is so weird. Okay. And because it's about drops, if anyone at home can do.
Oh, my brother can do that. Oh, where's my brother when you need him?
We can do it at home. I can do it occasionally, but I have to do it very quickly in the middle of the song.
Yeah.
Because I'm playing in beer, I need my hands. So I'll see how quickly I can do it. You give it a go.
No, it's one of my greatest shames as a little sister. I could never do it.
We'll both give it a go, and anyone at home who can do it, just stick it in. So after I say your one drop.
Call Planet Radio.
Okay, here we go. And these chord changes you might find familiar because they're the same as a lot of famous songs like
No Woman No Cry
or
Without You. Without You, I'm home.
Or maybe
When I get that feeling, I want sexual healing.
Okay, so there's a million songs that had these chord changes. And I thought, well, I haven't got a song with them. So I thought, well, if I make a song that has those chord changes, maybe it'll become famous too. But we'll give it a go. I've decided to start on a different chord to what those ones do. I'll start on the 4 chord, that one there. So here we go. It's just a... isn't it difficult? Here we go.
It's just a drop in the ocean, you say. Wouldn't make any difference anyway. But the ocean's nothing more than a whole lot of drops like yours. Your one drop can make a splash, make a ripple, make a wave that'll roll non-stop and ride a rising tide of resonating thoughts, provoke a commotion, requiring a voice to promote locomotion, movement of the feet to deplete the defeated feeling, stamp out your doubts out loud, imagine your drop up high in a thundercloud, raining down on the heart of a farmer, or maybe it could be a tear in the cheek of a baby. Do you want a spider's web torn? Is it a spit drip flipping from the lip of a glib politician? Is it the final critical addition to a magic potion and an ending blending, harmonizing emotion? Mix right through to you are the ocean and the ocean is you. Let a metaphor be a matter for discussion. Don't underestimate the repercussions. Your ways could well strike a chord or ring a bell. Infinity stretches large and little and leaves you right in the middle. Despite the big bill, your amount can still count. It's just a drop in the ocean, you say. Wouldn't make any difference anyway. But the ocean's nothing more than a whole lot of drops like yours. You're one drop.
There it is. Could make a splash, make a ripple, make a wave. There you go.
Wow.
Isn't that cute?
Oh, look, that's got to get a big round of applause here in Planet Radio Studios. Yay! Golf clap.
Would you just say golf clap?
Yeah, golf clap.
Birdie. I always call that birdie on the fifth clapping.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Nice, nice.
Very
nice.
Nice.
But golf clap, nice. Yeah. So, yeah, when I do it live, actually, if you come to the gig on Saturday, I do that with a loop pedal. So I do the first part of the song on guitar, and then I do a whole lot of beatboxing and bass lines and turn it into a reggae number by the end of it. So, but it's pretty nice on Imbira. I've never tried that before. It's in a completely wrong key.
I can.
But it's sort of fluffy down there.
It's fluffy. And look, I can imagine it on the guitar, having not heard the original that you were talking about. And the sound that comes from it is sort of so droppy. I mean,
yeah,
it's just, it's very watery. It's very.
And we've had a bit of a change in my approach to the song because I could do it up the octave. Maybe I could do the first part down the octave, you know. Oh, one drop. And then it's just a drop in the ocean, you say. Wouldn't make any difference anyway. So I could do it up the octave too, which could be nice. I'm going to dwell. There's going to be some dwelling going on.
There's some reflection in a reflection pool. That was just terrific. I'm having a great afternoon. I think my listeners are having an absolute treat if they're struggling in Brisbane traffic tonight.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. So what's so you've been playing instruments most of your life?
Yeah. I started playing drums when I was 4.
Mm. Oh, that must have pleased the parents a lot.
Well, it was Mum's idea because I was it was the start of the 70s. And you know when rocket needles came in, those big fat knitting needles?
Oh.
So you could make big loose shawls,
sort of things. For people who want to crochet but they can't figure it out.
Yeah. Rocket needles, great. And so they were really for good for drumming on beanbags. And so I spent a lot of my early life around the age of 4 and 5 drumming on beanbags. And,
beanbags, they can't be good resonators. They can't.
It's great. It's hours of fun. You can do nice, really tight single stroke rolls. Anyway, so at quite an early age, I was bashing on things. And Mum, you know, being a very supportive social worker type that she is, said, well, you know, do you want to get drum lessons? And there happened to be a classical percussionist dude up the road from us. So I got lessons off him. But then we moved to Canberra. So I moved away from my teacher. And all of a sudden, I wasn't playing drums. Strange. And I suddenly started doing much more singing and playing piano. And then about the age of 9 or 10, I took up trombone and all things just went horribly wrong from then on. And then guitar, then bass, and it's all just been ridiculous since then.
Have you ever recorded a track where you've actually, like, done, like, 10 instruments or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
On that CD.
Oh, that probably, CD, yeah.
Yeah, which that one there.
What's the that?
That one close, the one that you had your hands on.
You mean the Three Cheers for Peace and Quiet?
Three Cheers for Peace and Quiet, that'll be the one, which is available on iTunes.
iTunes, very high tech.
And we could play a track that isn't on my MySpace site, because then the people can go and listen to the other ones on that.
Yeah, which one's that?
Let's, we could play, what's got the most instruments? Probably the Buttercup.
Buttercup. Oh, that's easy. That's
Beera.
Three, yeah.
Yeah. But before we do that, let's why don't I do an all-vocal one?
All right.
Do you want to just have a – so this is a song – when you're a performer or just a person in general, you get – particularly if people are tired or they've had a big day or something, and they end up with a face that goes like, you know, it's not a pretty face because they're not thinking about what their face is doing.
You just put on a Kim face, like from Kath and Kim for the folks at home, a bit Kimmy. Aww.
So, yeah, a bit of a sneer, whingy face. And even though on the inside they might be happy as Larry, but really, you know, so unfortunate. So that when you're a performer, that becomes quite an issue if you're seeing all these faces in the audience doing that and you know deep down. So at the end of a Woodford, everyone's face looks like that, you know, and they can't help it. It's just what their face is doing. So I wrote a song all about it. I call it Unfortunate Resting Facial Expression Syndrome, which the acronym is URFIS. So... And I know a few people have started using the term URFIS, saying, oh, she had terrible URFIS.
Oh, it's anyway. A terrible syndrome. I've never laughed so much in my life. Okay.
Okay, here we go. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll do it in back that key. There's a woman in the crowd, doesn't seem to like the show. Then again, maybe she loves it, but hasn't let her face know. That's URFIS, Unfortunate Resting Facial Expression Syndrome. That's URFIS, you know it, you've seen the same, now it's got a name. Now I'm on an escalator, I'm arriving at the top. There's a 7-person pile up, when the guys in front stop. That's ESAPS, the escalator ending, stop and ponder syndrome. That's ESAPS, you know it, you've seen the same, now it's got an A. Now I'm at the get the words right then. Now I'm waiting at the airport and my flight's called through. People stampede like elephants just to stand in a queue. That's twills, unnecessary racing to wait in line syndrome. And there's, oh, hang on, this is a new one. And there's Twalpus, the texting walking lamppost interface syndrome. And there's Salbos, no, Cell Boss, the Sunday early leaf blower orchestra syndrome. And there's MRSIS, the making up ridiculous syndrome, acronym syndrome. Like URFIS, you know it, you've seen the same, now it's got a name. Thank you.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. Cracking up. I
think
love...
I've got one too many syndromes in there.
Oh, no, look, the syndromes are great. I mean, you know, I especially like the one where you, the text messaging
the
walking
the texting into... walking lamppost interface. Yeah. Well, it was sort of cool because lamppost interface, it was a gift.
Oh, that is a gift. That's poetry right there. Terrific. So you seem like a guy who is very influenced by sounds that you come across that aren't necessarily intended for musical use, I guess.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, like, well, the thing in that one that is probably the weirdest is pygmy yodeling. So I should explain to the people at home who haven't heard it before. It's sort of like normal yodeling, like yodely, yodely, where you're going from your man voice to your little kid voice. Okay, so man voice, little kid, yodely, oh. So that's yodeling, yeah? But if you bring those notes together, so that's what they're doing in Switzerland. But if you bring the notes together, you get what they do in Central Africa, which is called, you know, pygmy yodeling or close yodeling. So rather than yo, oh, 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 so you can yodel on one note and then you can yodel the wrong way. Which is lots of fun. But you do sound a bit weird when you're practicing because you get, and then the phone rings and you go, hello, hello. Yes, yes, Mal. Yeah, yeah, I'm a man. Yep, so
this
yep,
is
yep.
This so is actually something that teenagers could do, yeah. You know, to utilize their crazy voices.
It's takes a little while to get. And I'm pretty much the only person I know who has really mucked around with it as much as I have. There might be a reason for that. Anyway. But
can you do any of that crazy Tolvan throat singing?
I can do overtones. My low harmonics isn't great.
Mm.
Because there's that sort of thing, but I'm not so great at that. But there's which is hours of fun. I love doing that one.
I can do that one as well. I won't do it on radio, having not had the formal training, but I certainly, in the privacy of my own home, I do vibrations, and I certainly try to get that. It just, it's transfixing, because I also tried to do the Tolvan thing and found myself lacking a certain bassness.
It's just like, you know, going to, you know, when you're at the footy and you go, can the, you know, who are we going for up here?
Can the Dons.
Can the Dons.
Dons.
So it's basically that distortion of the back of your throat.
Oh, forget doing a Mexican wave at the cricket.
Yeah.
Forget it, mate. Can you imagine a bunch of Australians all like...
But the thing that I'm really into at the moment is I did a little bit in the Urfa song, which I just... in a little beatbox break, I never know what I'm going to do in it. But today I decided to put in the... It's basically going the farty sound with the lips, but singing the same note. So you're going... And go... okay. Which is just too much fun. I don't know if it sounds great, but it's really fun to do. It's just too much fun.
It's like it's got a bass sound to it. It actually comes across like a Primus type of sound.
If you really eat the mic, it's really bassy and it freaks out sound guys. It's fun. Oh, it's like your sound.
Trust me, I've definitely had my work cut out for me tonight doing any form of mixing of the sort of sounds that are coming out. I'm like, I've no idea. I thought, you know, maybe I'll lift the bass a little bit on the crazy little instrument you've got there, because I didn't think it'd be that bassy. But you are another kettle of fish. I think I need a couple of assistants or something. Why don't we go to another track from your new album?
Yeah, let's go to the Buttercup. So this is a song that the guy who mixed this, who was an engineer on Australian Crawl Records and stuff like that, because I recorded it all at home and did everything myself. So everything on this is me, and all the drums are beatbox, so there's got no real drums on it. But it was funny because the guy who mixed it, he kept, while I was mixing it, he kept turning to me and going, is that just one track? I go, yeah. He said, do it for me. And he just did the whole recording for it. Ross Cockle, lovely guy. And every time he'd get to something, he'd just go, do that for me. Oh, wow. Okay. And then he'd just get back into it. But this is the song that the drum sounds on this. He was so happy with what we came up with together. So, yes,
fantastic.
So this has got way too many instruments, and they're all me.
way too many instruments.
Oh, and I should explain. This is a song called The Buttercup, and it's a dance craze, so you can do it at home. It's all about flicking your buttock up. So it's a combination. It's a wordplay, of course.
Of course.
And so it's you know that thing where you pretend to put a little yellow, or you get the little yellow flower, and you put it under someone's chin and go, do you like butter? So it's a combination. You've not heard of it. You're giving me that look like you've... People in radio land will have heard of it and gone, yeah, that's that stupid thing. Anyway, but it's this little thing where you put a flyer under someone's chin, and because their chin glows yellow, it means they like dairy products, apparently.
Oh, so yeah, that sounds like about as sophisticated as, you know, like those love things where you go, yeah, Kate loves Julian, and you have to figure out how to buy the L's and the O's.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know that one.
You don't know that one?
I don't get out enough, do I?
I'll have to show you in the break. So let's go and...
Okay, so yeah, so it's combining the little yellow flower with flicking your buttercup in the air. So, you know, I thought there were so many bum songs on the radio in the sort of R&B business, so I thought I'd do my own take on it.
This is Mel Webb's Baby Got Back.
Grab yourself a partner quickly now. We can dance the buttercup. I'll show you how it all came from a game we played for hours. Outstanding in the field of flowers by the botanical name of ranunculus. It inflames little funculus. The grooves improve with a glutinous maximal gambian move. A double entendre or two. And you gently zip that yellow bloom beneath your partner's chin. Vermicelli golden glow upon that chinny skin. I'll dance since your task is to ask, spread our wings, they keep. You wash your Caroline boots, your bare spoon, there's margarine as you utter. Do you like butter? Do you like butter? Do you like butter? Do you like butter? Then move around with a chariot, turning arms in a bull bystand, and flick that buttercup in the air, walk away like you just don't care. So how'd you go? Did you do okay? Did you bump into someone as you walked away? Well, that's a new partner without a doubt. Updating's what the buttercup's all about. Hug what you love, then let it wander yonder to ponder, growing fonder, till one day you're reuniting with him, sharing the fat, ruminating rhythm. You become ruminating rhythm. Gently zoom that yellow bloom beneath your partner's cheek, and then they show a golden glow upon that chinny skin. I think your task is to ask the spread on which they came. You wash your Cadillac boots, your bare spoon, that's part you mean as you order. Do you like butter? Do you like butter? Do you like butter? Are you lactose intolerant? Do you like butter? Then move around with a dairy head, turning arms in a bowl by a stand. Flick that buttercup in the air, walk away like you just don't care. That's a buttercup, don't ever ghost, just make it up. Ooh, that's a buttercup, no one really knows when you mess it up. Ooh, that's a buttercup, don't know how it goes, just make it up. Don't grow roots and you vegetate. Good things come to those who gyrate. Well, how to go? Did it do the trick? Did your timing suck? Did you splat the flick? Well, be free range, do it anywhere. My granny even does it in a wheelchair. Well, they're willing to be those who spend the chance to enhance romance with a daddy dance. Let them stray on their gormless way. They may still cotton on someday to the buttercup. Maybe someday they'll cotton on. Gently zoom the yellow bloom beneath your partner's chin, and they may show a golden glow upon the chinny skin. Then your task is to watch the spread on which they came. You brush your garlic with your various mother's margarine as you watch. Do you like butter? Do you like butter? Do you like butter? Do you like butter? Come on, tell me, do you like butter? Do you like butter? Oh, please, do you like butter? Would you prefer some lard? Do you like butter? Then move around with a dairy head, chanting arms in a bow stand, and flick that buttercup. Well, that's about it. I hope you found it fun. Now you're bound to spread around one and all to strange, a friend and foe. So the seed and buttercup stem to grow. That's a buttercup. Good things come to those who gyrate. Move around with a dairy head, turning arms in a bow pine stand, then flick that buttercup in the air, walk away like you just don't care. Move around with a dairy head, turning arms in a bow pine stand, then flick that buttercup in the air, walk away like you just don't care. Move around with a dairy head, turning arms in a bow pine stand, flick that buttercup in the air, walk away like you just don't care.
Planet Radio, where everything's aglow.
Flip that buttercup in the air.
Oh, my buttercup's feeling much better after that. Thank you so much. That song is amazing. How many instruments are involved in that?
What is it? Two trumpets, two trombones, guitar, bass. Several, there's a straight beatbox pattern in the middle, and then I did a cymbal track as well, and a conga part, and there's a few sort of bits in there as well. Did I say keyboards?
No, we missed keyboards.
There's a keyboard in there as well.
That's 11.
I think that's about it. And then vocals. There's about 7 vocal parts in there. And the cello's on the elephant when your partner's chin. That bit.
I can't believe, like, listening to it, it sounds a bit like Jamiroquai, some of the bits in the middle.
He's great.
And that's just hilarious because it's so similar and yet it just fades out back into uniquely your stuff. So, what an amazing thing. Have you ever done anything with kids?
Yeah, I do lots of kids.
Yeah.
It's great.
You could be like the beatboxing kind of cockroaches. Oh, no, they're not cockroaches anymore, are they?
They're wiggles, that's right. Beatboxing wiggles. Well, Yeah, I don't know if I want to do the whole kids thing. See, for me, it works best. This is my ideal world, is when I can perform in situations where all ages come along. So kids down the front, mingling down the front. You know, a few 18 to 35s and a few 35 plus and a few 60 pluses. And because what I do sort of seems, even though I do sort of slightly R&B sort of stuff, it seems to appeal to everyone, but an interesting cut of everyone. So there'll be people from all those demographics that hate me, which is cool. But there's also, like, within that, there's a really, you know, so unfortunately I'm very hard to pitch at festivals because festivals always go, what do you do? And it's like, I don't know. I just do what I do.
I don't know. You know, you're very similar to us, actually. We don't have a demographic either. The Planet Radio audience, we call them a psychographic.
A psychographic.
First of all, it connotes something evil and or possibly supernatural. Yeah. Maybe not evil, maybe delightful, but... we have the same problem. It's like, look, we don't just appeal to a particular group of people.
Which is good.
You know, which is fun. Yeah. But there's certain kinds of people who probably wouldn't turn us on if their life depended on it because they just don't want to hear any of that hippie tree hugger nonsense.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, that's great. So, obviously, I think you'll find a few of your psychographic listeners actually on this show, hopefully tonight. So, if you're interested in seeing Mel, I mean, if you're like me and are just totally blown away by his performance ability and stuff, he's going to be around. How long are you around for?
Just till Sunday. I've got a gig in Melbourne on Sunday morning.
Sunday morning gig?
So I've got, yeah, stupid.
Oh, my God.
Stupid. But, I'm here the next few days. So I'm playing down at the Gold Coast at a place called...
Can't remember where he's playing on the Gold Coast. Okay.
Three worlds.
I don't know.
Anyway, three worlds. It's Mermaid Beach. We're zeroing in now. Oh, my brain. I've got such a bad brain.
Oh, look, don't worry. And if only I had Google, I could Google map us and I could find out what the contours of the land was that you're going to be playing.
Dude.
So you could figure out just what kind of protection for your buttercup bum you should bring to the gig. this is on Saturday night.
Yeah, that's Friday night. Three worlds. It is three worlds, I think. Better than the Gold Coast. But if anyone actually wants some real details rather than just the goo that's
flaky
coming off
ones.
My brain.
Yeah, yeah.
If you go to malweb.com, of course, all the details are there. Or if you're a MySpace addict, which a lot of people are, if you just search malweb in MySpace, they come up.
Yeah.
But, and you know, I've got different things on both sides.
We can also just buy your CDs down at JB or any of those sort of places too.
Yeah, through MGM.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Fantastic. So what's the long-term plan?
Oh, and also playing at the Globe. That's the long-term plan because it's 2 days off. The Globe with Moot on Saturday night.
Saturday night, the Globe. That'll be really great.
That'll be fun.
And
I'm doing a workshop in Chinatown Mall on the afternoon too.
Well, that's important to know.
Anyway, that's all on the website. Blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah.
Anyway, there was something else I had to mention. Oh, you know how I was saying I was doing did the show with Bob Brown?
Yeah. Great. Greens. Go Bob.
And did you know, have you heard the rumor about Bob Brown and Jimi Hendrix?
Oh, Jimmy.
Okay. See, I'd heard this rumor about Bob Brown because he used to be a doctor. And I'd heard this rumor that Bob Brown was there when Jimi Hendrix was admitted to hospital. And I was like, really? Wow, cool.
That's a great rumor.
Anyway, so when I finally worked with Bob, did this show with him, I said, oh, look, you can clear up this rumor about the Jimi Hendrix thing. And he said, oh, yeah, well, it's true. I said, all right. And he said, yeah, I was there. Well, there were four doctors on that night. And I was there. I could see that he was dead. Everyone knew that he was dead. As soon as he came in, he was dead. At the same time as he came in, another guy was brought in who'd come off his motorbike, but he was alive. So I actually attended to the guy who had a chance of living, but all the other doctors went and attended to the dead rock star. And I was like, go, Bob!
That is such a great story.
But I just love the way that, you know, I was there. And what's more, I didn't attend to him because I was helping a guy come over his motorbike. Because, oh, stop being a saint.
Yeah,
anyway,
God,
he's a good man.
That's a great story. All right, on that note, why don't we play another song from one of your albums?
What do you want to do? The bike? Do you want to do Bike Off, that one?
Oh, the old bike song. Yeah, we already have.
So this is a different version of the bike song.
All right. Well, while I'm getting that one queued up, why don't we have Bike That I Have on?
Oh, now come on, stick that one on. And I'll quickly, while you're sticking that on, I'll quickly tell people the next show that I'm doing. The next show that I'm doing on the politically correct front is a show with Peter Singer.
No, shut Serious. Up.
In the Melbourne Comedy Festival this year, if you're going to be down in Melbourne for the Comedy Festival, I'm doing a show with Peter Singer on the 11th and 12th of May. So, sorry, April. Isn't that nuts?
Oh,
so it's another a comedy with Peter Singer, and I think it's going to be really good.
For those of you who don't know who Peter Singer is, he basically started the animal liberation movement back in the 70s in defense of the animals, talked all about factory farming and the disastrous conditions animals are kept in, and he's written numerous books. If you have any amateur philosophical desires or interests and or you're interested in the environment and the way you can help by reducing the amount of animals you eat, and knowing you help me. Oh, Peter Singer, go for it. Got to get your stuff.
So there you go. So that's the next little show that I'm doing. Hours of fun.
What on earth are you going to be doing with him?
Oh, okay. Well, it's a comedy show, and it's written by this woman from Tasmania who used to be an actuary who's gone into comedy, and she plays a character called Dolly Putin. And we were up at – she was the one who did the Bob Brown show as well, and she's a delightful character whose politics are sort of a bit of a mess, and she – Yeah, it takes on these great thinkers, and she's taking on Peter Singer.
She's taking on Peter Singer. Good on Peter Singer for partaking.
And same with Bob, you know. Yeah, and he only came out looking good at the end of it.
Yeah.
And so I think Peter's gone, oh, well, okay, I'll take a risk. But my band Totally Gorgeous are the house band for it.
Oh, wow.
So Penelope's, of course, got several songs that are appropriate, and so does Carl Penelope, and so does Andrew. So
amazing.
It'll be fun.
So Totally Gorgeous, for those of you who don't remember or don't know, we've been playing them on the station for a while now, and they actually, all their instruments are made out of gourds, hence the gorgeous.
Gorgeous.
And a gourd is something more Americans know than Australians. It's basically all the butternut squashes and pumpkins and things that grow in the ground grow above the ground, but are big and...
the cucurbit family.
Well, I'm glad the man who's in the band knows what family they're in. I can talk about cephalopods, but not the...
Oh, we love to talk about cephalopods. Don't get me started.
Don't get me started on squids. Okay. All right. Let's hear Totally Gorgeous, great band, all get together with these funny gourd instruments. And we've had on the show the Totally Gorgeous song Bike, which is what I played last week. So here is a different version the song.
This is the original version, which the lovers of Lionel Woodley, you might recognise this as the little dance music they play after they fix the hole in the wall, because I did all the music on the Lionel Woodley show, and I liked this riff so much I thought, I've got to turn it into a song. So I don't know if there's copyright issues in me using this, but too late.
Too late.
It's mine.
Push on a pedal, push on a pedal, get ya. Heart started, push on a pedal, push it down and up again. Push on a pedal, push on a pedal, get ya. Heart started, push on a pedal, push it down and up again. Get on your bike, sit on the seat, push your feet on the pedals, and ride it all around, ride it all around. Get on your bike, sit on the seat, push your feet on the pedals, and ride it all around, ride it all around. Oh, get that car out of my way. I wanna ride my bike today. It keeps me fit, gets me there. I won't go stinking off the air. Leave behind the daily grind. Let your mind unwind. If it's life, pretend to lie. Better get yourself a bike. Put your feet on the pedal and ride it all around, ride it all around. Get on your bike, sit on the seat. Put your feet on the pedal and ride it all around, ride it all around. Get that car out of my way. I wanna ride my bike today. It keeps me fit, gets me there. I won't go stinking off the air. Leave behind the daily grind. Let your mind unwind. If it's life, pretend to lie. You better get yourself a bike.
Behind the dealing grind, let your mind unwind. If it's life, pretend to lie. Better catch yourself a bite. Oh, 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 catch yourself a bite. The money go round's overwhelmed, the gambling horse is bound. Throw that two-rat cowboy to the ground. So will he survive, take a dive, or play his foe alive? Armed with a Gucci watch and a four-wheel drive. Bring back your heart, subdivide your soul. Bring back your heart, subdivide your soul. Pay that troll his toll. Cut your tears so sincere is programmed to appear. The sound of padding backs is coming near. Well, that's my turn off, let me out right here. The F doesn't understand economics. Volcanoes really don't give a hoot about political theory. Gravity goes down and entropy tends to go up. Whatever that means to a rock. And for the ocean, there's no notion of religious devotion. And yet, we'll still be finding new cows to kowtow to when the sun gives up with a cough. Cause we think we're so tough. You said we're out to export the same stuff we import, all in the name of good financial sport. Humanity flows in exposing something on the nose. On the face of the earth, a nasty freckle grows. Bring back your heart, subdivide your soul. Bring back your heart, subdivide your soul. Pay that troll his toll. Exorbitant fees catch the breeze and spread like some disease. Ascending graphs are gonna bring us to our knees. Well, that's my turn off, let me out here please. The earth doesn't understand economics. Volcanoes really don't give a hoot about political theory. Gravity goes down and entropy tends to go up. Whatever that means to a rock. And for the ocean, there's no notion of religious devotion. And yet, we'll still be finding new cows to kowtow to when the sun gives up with a cough. Cause we think we're so tough. The earth does not stand economics. Volcanoes really don't give a hoot about political theory. Gravity goes down and entropy tends to go up. Whatever that means to a rock. And for the ocean, there's no notion of religious devotion. And yet, we'll still be finding new cows to kowtow to when the sun gives up with a cough. Cause we think we're so, we think we're so tough. Oh yeah, we think we're so tough. Bring back your heart, subdivide your soul.
You're listening to Planet Radio 88 FM. I'm Kate Conroy with you this evening, and that was Mal Webb with his song Ringbark. Mal's left the studio now. It was hard to let him go. Such an entertaining and fantastically interesting person and a great musician as well. Make sure you get to the Globe on Saturday night if you want to hear more of his songs and his stuff. Oh, we're getting to the end of Planet Radio's A Climate Affair this evening. It's 6:52 p.m. And we're close to the end of the show. Hope you've had a great time with us today. I've certainly had a great show, enjoyed broadcasting. I hope your day has been a little bit sweeter and a little bit lighter, I guess, is the nice idea. Sort of like a meringue, maybe. A little meringue show for you this afternoon. All right, let's hear another tune.
Amatati.
Planet Radio 88 FM. You're listening to a show all about environmental news and current affairs. And one of the things I've talked about on the show previously has been the introduction of mandatory compact fluorescent light globes introduced into Australia as of about 2009. This is something implemented by the federal government of Australia, and it's intended to massively reduce the number of or the amount of power used by domestic homes, and presumably that means in businesses as well, because of course it will be you will be unable to sell light bulbs in Australia that do not meet certain energy targets. What's good about the Australian policy is it doesn't mandate any particular technology. It just says it has any bulb has to meet a particular criteria for energy efficiency. Contrast this with the Californian introduction of compact fluorescence as mandatory. Very recently, it's been pushed through this bill, but it's actually mandating that particular technology, which means there's a bit of a problem when it comes to innovation. And certainly, General Electric has just announced an advance of light bulbs in the efficiency of light bulbs to put them on par with compact fluorescent lamps. And they say the new high-efficiency incandescent lamp, which incorporates innovative new materials being developed in partnership by General Electric's lighting division, would replace 40 to 100 watt household incandescent light bulbs, the most popular lamp type used by consumers. The new technology could be expanded to all other incandescent types as well. The target for these bulbs at initial lamp production is nearly twice as efficient at 30 lumens per watt as current incandescent bulbs. Ultimately, the high efficient lamp technology is expected to be about four times as efficient as current incandescent bulbs and comparable to compact fluorescents. Adoption of new technology could lead to greenhouse gas emission reductions up to 40 million tonnes of CO2 in the US and up to 50 million tonnes in the EU if the entire installed base of traditional incandescent bulbs were replaced with these new lamps, which is amazing. So that's good, you know, good for Australian policy that maybe companies have gone, well, heck, we're going to have to start providing products to these new legislations. Let's take the bull by the horns and give them something that they can utilise. And a lot of people say that they don't like the fluorescent light that's given off by these compact fluorescents. It is a different light. We have to acknowledge that. It isn't just the same, and there's a lot of places where we don't notice the difference, but there are some places where it just doesn't seem as nice. I know that's my experience. But another problem with the compact fluorescents, apart from anything aesthetic, is that the Environmental Protection Agency and some large Walmart, places like that, they are aggressively promoting the sale of these compact fluorescents, but actually the bulbs contain small amounts of mercury, a neurotoxin, and the companies and federal government haven't come up with effective ways to get Americans or the rest of the world to recycle them. So it's one thing to bring in a new set of bulbs and so forth, but then we don't actually have a way to get rid of these in an efficient manner. The problem with the bulbs is that they'll break before they get to the landfill, and they'll break in containers, or they'll break in a dumpster, or they'll break in the trucks, and workers may be exposed to very high levels of mercury when that happens. And, you know, look, if bulbs break near homes, they can contaminate the soil. Mercury is a potent neurotoxin, and it is especially dangerous for children and fetuses. That means, you know, inside the womb. Most exposure to mercury comes from eating fish contaminated with mercury. Some cities, states and counties have outlawed putting the compact fluorescent bulbs in the trash. But in most states, this is talking about the United States, of course, the practice is legal. And I'm sure in Australia, we don't have any mandatory recycling program. It's really good to know that there is problems with the current technology or this implementing technology, even though it's going to be much better for Australia to bring that type of technology, and hopefully greater technical innovation will really save the day here, and in the future we will have fantastic solutions. Up until then, buy the compact fluorescents, pop them in your bulbs, and just be careful when you dispose of them because they do have toxic levels of mercury inside them. We can't have a perfect world, but certainly let's try to get a little bit better every day. You've been listening to A Climate Affair. It is now 6:59 p.m. and I'm Kate Conroy, and I hope you have a fantastic evening, and I'll see you next week.